Exile of God, I'm Chase. And there's no David, very unfortunate for us today, as David will be taking a hiatus from the show. So for this episode, it's going to be a solo adventure. You're just going to get to listen to me talk about Theros Sealed. That's going to be our main topic today. Got a few other topics that we're going to talk about as well. But yes, David will not be in the next few episodes. I don't actually know how long his hiatus is going to be, but he had some things that came up in his personal life, which made him unable to attend our sessions no longer. Hopefully, we'll eventually hear back from him. In the meantime, we're going to do a solo episode today, and I'm going to see if I can try to recruit some special guests or other people to talk about some different topics within Magic the Gathering. But like always, this is RTR Forward, where we talk mostly, I say mostly, about Pioneer, Standard, Historic, and Brawl. But today we're going to be focused more on Sealed. But before we do that, I'm going to go ahead and throw out a message to our sponsor. And our sponsor is me, I guess. But no, we don't have a sponsor. But I did start streaming. So you'll probably notice if you tune into our YouTube channel and are, you know, watching or listening to our podcast on our YouTube channel, you'll notice that you're starting to see some stream highlights and some stream videos from my stream going up. So I'm streaming at Parched MTG. Where you can watch me play MTG Arena. I might play Pioneer in the future on MTGO, but right now we're just doing MTG Arena streams. So we're playing Brawl. We played Brawl last Wednesday, and the VOD for that will be up hopefully sometime early next week. So we play Brawl on Wednesday, so we stream Wednesday night. It's from, I believe it's 8 p.m. Central Time to 10 p.m. Central Time. So if you wanted to pop in the stream, talk to me a little bit, and watch me play some Brawl during the only time you can play Brawl where it's free and you don't have to pay 10,000 gold or 2,000 gems. So yeah, just join in and have a good time. But I also will be streaming on the weekends. So 10 a.m. Central Time to 1 p.m. Central Time, both Saturday and Sunday. So you can join the stream. Like I said, Parched MTG. You can follow my Twitter at Parched MTG to find out when I go live. And then also, if you're not familiar, our podcast is on Spotify. And that's RTR Forward on Spotify. It's Parched MTG is the YouTube channel, but it's RTR Forward if you just want to search for it on YouTube. If you'd like to subscribe to our YouTube channel, give us some views there, give us some likes, stuff like that. And then you can follow our Twitters. We got the RTR Forward Twitter, where we post fun polls and fun facts and stuff like that about the podcast. And then my personal Twitter, where you can, I don't know, watch me rant about memes and stuff. I don't know. I just talk about random things, post pictures of my cats and stuff. But yeah, so recently, we didn't talk about this in our last episode, but there was another Secret Lair product. It's Secret Lair Year of the Rat. So this is a one-of. So last time we saw Secret Lair products, we saw a slew of about 7 of them releasing once a day. You could get it for that 24-hour period, and then you could never get it again. I ended up picking the Kaleidoscope Killers, which is the one that has the multicolored creatures. They've already started curling on me, unfortunately, so yeah, but so this one's rat focused because it's the Year of the Rat, and it's coming out on January 27th. You can pick up your own copy for $39.99, and I think the store opens up at 9 a.m. Pacific time. So if you're Central Time, that's 11 a.m. Central Time, noon Eastern Time. But what can you get in that package? Well, you're gonna get this time 8 cards. You're gonna get a foil alternate art Marrow Gnawer, which is honestly one of the best reasons to pick up this set, because that is a very expensive card. I don't think it's been reprinted since we were in Kamigawa in the early to mid-2000s. So this is a legendary rat rogue for 5 mana. It's 3/2 black, and it says all rats have fear, which it's an older mechanic. We haven't seen it in more recent times, but it basically says that this creature can't be blocked except by artifact creatures and or black creatures. So pretty near unblockable for the most part. But it gives all of your rats that ability. And it is a 2/3. So not too bad. But it has a second ability that lets you tap him, sacrifice a rat, and then put X11 black rat creature tokens into play, where X is the number of rats you control. So you can start duplicating or maybe even doing some rat shenanigans to go ahead and create more rats. So if you've got more than 2 rats on the field, you sack one of them, make a few more, and then just keep multiplying. And so he's a really nice rat-based commander. I think that's the reason why he's holding about a $28 price tag right now. You also get a one foil art, alternate art Pack Rat, which if you're not familiar with Pack Rat, he's in Pioneer. He was printed in Return to Ravnica. He is a creature rat with a star, so his power and toughness will change depending on how many rats you control. So his power and toughness are equal to the number of rats you control. He's a 2 mana, so he's 1 and a black, and he has an activated ability of 2 and a black, discard a card, and you can put a token onto the battlefield that's a copy of Pack Rat. So he's kind of his own engine, took over a lot in Standard and Mono Black Devotion. If you just had some extra cards in your hand that you wanted to pitch to him, you can just slowly grow your rat forces just with this one single card. So he can get out of hand pretty quickly. That's not a bad pick either. It's about $5 or so. So we're already kind of seeing, if you pick this up, you're already getting like $32 in value. And we're not even halfway through the amount of cards that you're going to get through here. You're also going to get a copy, another foil, alternate art, Ink Eyes Servant of Oni, which is a 6 mana rat ninja. It's 4 and 2 black for a 5/4 with ninjutsu. And so to activate its ninjutsu ability, you have to pay 3 and 2 black. And so ninjutsu works if you return an unblocked attacker you control to your hand, put this card into play from your hand, tapped and attacking. So let's say you're attacking in with an evasion creature or a creature that can't be blocked. It can go ahead and swing right in. And then Ink Eyes, if you've got 5 open mana with at least 2 black, you can ninjutsu him in. Take that flyer back to your hand, and then now he's attacking. And so he has a combat dealing damage ability, so whenever he deals combat damage to a player, you may put target creature card from a player's graveyard into play under your control. So he can reanimate any player's graveyard under your control if he deals combat damage, which is pretty awesome. Not only that, but he also has another ability that allows you to pay 2 mana and regenerate Ink Eyes. So it's 1 and a black, and you can regenerate him, which basically says prevent all damage, it can't be destroyed, and tap it. So regenerate's a pretty neat ability. We haven't seen it for a while. They've kind of phased it out as we've moved in the last few years. I think Dragons of Tarkir was the last time we saw regenerate, something along that. Maybe even we might have seen it in that last Return to Innistrad, Shadows of Innistrad block. I don't actually remember. And then you get 5 foil alternate art copies of Rat Colony, which is a card from Dominaria. So this is the Dominaria set that came out in 2018. It's a common. Rat Colony gets +1/+0 for each other rat creature you control. It's a 2 mana for a 2/1. It's 1 and a black. And a deck can have any number of cards named Rat Colony. So if you want to build Pioneer deck or a Popper deck with 10, like 20 swamps and 40 rat colonies, you can. So you get 5 copies of that, which is pretty cool, because obviously if you're going to play this card, you're not going to play just 4 copies, so you're going to play quite a few more. So it's nice that they give you more than a playset of this card. But anyways, if you want to grab yourself the Secret Lair, which it's a pretty nice experience, depending on where you live in the world, shipping can be quick or shipping can take quite a while. We've seen some issues with some shipping and things getting lost, but I think Wizards has done a pretty good job of handling that. For me, I got mine pretty quick, so I didn't mind the wait. So anyways, if you can't tell, I probably sound a little different, but I'm actually under the weather again. It's been a heck of a week for me, but slowly getting another illness to start off the year 2020. But yeah, so we just recently had a pre-release last weekend, where people got to get their hands on Theros Beyond Death for the first time, you know, with their hands. Obviously, you could have played it in Arena, I think a few days prior. But I had a pretty good time. I ended up playing in two events of just single player sealed. So basically, if you don't know what sealed is, you basically, in pre-release style, you get a little box which has, I believe, 6 packs and a promo card, which can be any rare or any mythic in that set. And so it's foil, it has a little date stamped on it saying, hey, this is when the pre-release is. So it's a really cool little collectible thing. But depending on what card you get, it can actually be worth quite a bit of money as well. So you get that, you get 6 booster packs, you crack them, and I think you typically, depending on the game store, you get, you know, 40 to 60 minutes to build a deck out of the cards that you have. Typically lands, basic lands are provided by the store that you go to. So you can go ahead and build your deck. And then you play best of three against other people that have done the same thing. So it's pretty interesting. I used to go into pre-releases with, I don't know, maybe a more negative opinion towards sealed. Just because I'm more of a constructed guy myself, so I like coming in with a game plan. I've got, you know, my deck, I've built this deck, I've tested this deck, I know what this deck does, and I know how it plays against certain matchups. I know I have a sideboard that I can use for certain matchups, and I just prefer to play Magic that way. But being in like a limited format like this, you don't have those comforts. You don't have guaranteed cards that you know will be in your deck and that you can play, and that guaranteed cards that you have sideboards, and you also don't know what you're going to play against, because there are tons of different decks that you can build. Obviously, some of the sets for the limited focus, they do kind of push you in certain directions, certain color players that you're going to play and stuff like that. But as for me, I actually had some really great pools. In both of my sealed pools, I typically get absolute garbage. I've gone to pre-releases for the last, 4 years, and I typically get pretty bad pools and make pretty bad decks. But I think at that point, I didn't really care. I go, you know, I'm coming in, I'm opening new cards, yeah, I'll play a few games, I'll drop and go home. Well, this time around, I actually pulled some really good cards. So I ended up building a Simic deck for the Friday event, running Nylea, Henide, and Thrix, the Sudden Storm. So if you don't remember those cards, is Nylea is the green god. So she is a indestructible god for 4 mana, 3 and a green. She's a 5/6. She has the god clause of devotion. So if your devotion to green is less than 5, she isn't a creature. She makes your creatures cost 1 less, and she has an activated ability for 3 mana. It's 2 and a green to reveal the top card of your library. If it's a creature card, put it in your hand. Otherwise, you may put it into your graveyard. So I had that card in my sealed pool alongside Thrix, which is just in the realm of sealed, just really good. It's 5 mana for 4/5, 3 and 2 blue for a legendary creature, elemental giant. He has flash, flying, and spells you cast with converted mana cost 5 or greater cost 1 less to cast and can't be countered. So those two cards alone, and it helps that the rest of my blue and green pools were much, much, much better than some of my other color pools. But I ended up doing really well with that deck. I actually made it to the top 8 at my game store. I believe the top 8 started around like 1 a.m. So I was there from 6:30 all the way to 1 a.m. We grinded out 6 rounds. And once we got to the top 8, everybody was like, let's go home. So our game store allowed us to chop it up. So they split the packs evenly for the most part. And then you take it and you go. So I ended up in the seed chart, start opening up the top 8, ended up getting 5th. And I walked away with 8 packs. So I was pretty happy. Got to rest easy that evening. Got home pretty late. Ended up going to bed around 2 a.m. And then we had another event that next day, that Saturday, at noon. So I didn't get a lot of hours of sleep that night. But I was pretty proud of how that deck played. And then the next day, I opened up another nutty sealed pool. This time I got an Uro, which is just, he's a house. I pulled the Wavebreak Hippocamp, which lets you draw cards if you cast things on your opponent's turn. And then Labyrinth of Skophos, which is that land that taps for colorless, but you can pay 4, remove target attacking or blocking creature from combat. So I learned that day that, so Maze of Ith, if you're familiar with the card, it's played in Commander and other older formats, pulls a creature out of combat and untaps them. So this card, Labyrinth of Skophos, pulls it out of combat, but doesn't untap it. So it's actually pretty interesting. I got to see that little interaction of doing that in Limited, kind of just pulling like one of their best creatures. If they tried to attack with it or block with it, I just pulled it out of combat and tapped it, especially if I did it on their turn. And then it's just tapped for my go. So it ended up working out pretty well. I ended up not doing as great, and it was kind of due to the part that I had some plans that afternoon, so I didn't actually want to stay the whole time. So I ended up just playing 2 rounds and dropping. But I feel like if I had stayed in it, that deck would have gone pretty far as well. Uro is just a house. In the matches I played, I pulled him out of the graveyard and cast him with his escape cost a few times. And if you're not familiar, Uro's the blue-green titan, which you can pay 2 blue and 2 green to escape him and exile 5 other cards to bring him, who's a 6/6. Back to the yard. He's got to enter the battlefield an attack ability of drawing a card, gaining 3 life, putting a land on from your hand on the battlefield. So I was decking myself almost every game. I finished a game with 2 cards in my library and 1 one round, and I finished the game with three in another round, and yeah, things were getting pretty dicey, because 40 card decks do not go well when you're drawing a lot of cards, and Uro definitely let me do that. So for the most part, I believe I enjoyed this format. I've played a lot of Sealed on MTG Arena recently on my stream and in my free time, and I've really enjoyed this format. I really think Darrow's Limited is just a solid format. This format really relies on flying creatures, so I've definitely sealed a lot of games with some flying creatures for sure. This format definitely seems to kind of clog up the board pretty quickly, so flyers are pretty valuable this time around. But so that brings the question of I just wanted to spend a little bit of this podcast today talking about some tips for doing better in Sealed. So not just Theros Sealed, but Sealed in general. These are some things that I was kind of thinking of, as you know, I've noticed recently playing a lot more Sealed with this format. I just felt like I was doing better. I was making better decisions. The decks I was building were just much better in comparison to how I did in the past. And so then I just kind of sat down and I thought, so what did I do different? You know, what strategies did I try? Were there certain things that I wasn't falling for like I used to? Like maybe some kind of rares that I really wanted to play that I knew weren't as good in this format as, you know, I thought they would be. So I kind of whipped up a little list here, and we're going to kind of talk about it. So this is kind of some tips for doing better in Sealed, but we'll kind of narrow it down to Theros Sealed because that's what's popular right now. So if you're playing it in your store, if you're playing it online, maybe some things to think about. So our first bullet point is not all rares are playable. So this also counts for mythics. So usually when you think like, hey, limited, I'm just going to draft all the rares. I'm just going to rare draft everything because rares are good. They're stronger than the average uncommon and common, but that's not always the case. A lot of rares and mythics are very specific, so they kind of need a shell to be built around them for them to actually be good. And a good example of that is Kallax, which is the planeswalker from this set. It's the green-white planeswalker that relies heavily on enchantments. So if you don't have an enchantment-focused deck, you probably shouldn't run Kallax, because Kallax's +1 looks for enchantments, his -3 relies on enchantments, and his -7 relies on enchantments. So maybe if you pull that shiny new mythic, it's a planeswalker. Oh, this would just be great and limited. There's not a lot of planeswalker removal, stuff like that. He's not the kind of guy that I would really jump towards a deck with, unless, like, let's say I open him and then I open, you know, some other really strong enchantments or cards that rely on enchantments in both green and white. So if I've got a good pool of those cards, and you know, it's maybe slightly better than what's in my other colors, then I would probably play him. But a good example of a card that's probably just never good and is a rare from this set would be Idyllic Tutor. Obviously, you don't want a 3-mana sorcery that searches for an enchantment, puts in your hand. While it does sound pretty fun, like, hey, if I've got a god, I can search for him. And maybe that's the only section where maybe you do want to run it. Let's say you pull a Thassa or pull any god, and you're like, oh, I have an Idyllic Tutor, it's in my colors, maybe I should just play it. But in a situation where, let's say, your blue and your black is better and you want to kind of splash an Idyllic Tutor in there, I wouldn't do that. So there's quite a few cards. I think Heliod's Intervention, not a very good card to pull to base your gameplay over. Probably what you shouldn't play are rare lands. So usually rare lands are like the dud of the pack. So if you open a sealed pool and you see a rare land, you're like, crap, is it in my colors? It's not in my colors. Yeah, you probably shouldn't play it, because this format doesn't, in general, have a lot of fixing. I think the most fixing you get is there's a common land that can slightly fix your mana at a cost. So you actually have to pay 2 mana to produce 1-colored mana of any color. But then you do have Travel's Amulet. But for the most part, this format's not very forgiving for more than 2-colored decks. You have a few cards that are, you know, double to triple costs to help Devotion. So maybe it's a good idea to kind of stay away from the 3-colored ways. And so that's my next tip. So when you should and shouldn't go 3 colors. So in this set, it's definitely unlike Ravnica. So Ravnica, when we went back to Guilds of Ravnica and Ravnica Allegiance, you had a lot more fixing in the format. You had lands that tap for multiple colors. You had mana producers, stuff like that, that can kind of save you from going, you know, if you go 3 colors or 4 colors, you're going to be fine. Well, then we went to Eldraine. So Eldraine was a lot more single color based. They had abilities that relied on you to pay three or more types of the same color to get an increased effect on a card. They had some legendary creatures that cost three of one color, stuff like that. That set was very unforgiving for going more than two colors. For the most part, in sealed, you're going to go two colors. It's not often that you'll be going one color. You're not going to go monocolored unless, like, you just have the nuts. And so let's say you pull a Heliod, which is white. You pull, I don't know, an Elspeth. You pull just like Archon of Sun's Grace, Idol of Obstruction, Elspeth Conquers Death, Shadow of the Sky. If you pull like all of these cards, yeah, you probably just want to build a mono white deck. If your pool is mostly white, let's say you've got a lot of good white uncommons and commons, so ones that can either, you know, give you flying or some removal effects or some really neat abilities, stuff like that, then yeah, go mono white or go mono colored. But typically in sealed, you're not going to have that kind of card selection to allow you to go mono colored, so you're always going to typically go two colored. So for Theros, I would definitely recommend not going three colored unless you really have a payoff. So when I say that, think about this situation. So recently, I did a sealed event on an MTG Arena, and the cards that I opened an Aelia, I opened a Uro, and I opened a Pelucranos Unchained, which, to start off, that's just a nutty. It was insane. I went 7-1 with it. If you wanted to see the VOD, it's on YouTube, but it was insane. So obviously, two of those share colors, the Uro and the Aelia share colors, and then the Aelia and the Pelucranos Unchained share colors, but if you put all three together, you got a three-color deck. So if you do decide to splash three colors, like you get a really good off color or slightly off color, and when I say slightly off color, it shares at least one color with your current color pair, then maybe try it. And the best way I would do it is not go, all right, I'm going to evenly split up three of the colors. So I got blue, black, green. Let's get the even amount of all of them. Don't do that. Okay. Don't try to lower your deck's power level by trying to bring in that extra color, because if you're like, I'm playing black, I might as well play these now. Don't do that, okay? You can still get away with a few, like, two to three black sources. Play a Pelucranos, maybe play your second best black card. In that situation, I had a pretty open three spot, so I grabbed an Underworld Charger, which is three mana for 3/3, can't block with Escape. So that was a fine slot in. I only slotted in two black cards. I think I threw in, like, four black sources, and it was good. So I wasn't going to get punished if, you know, I drew like a black card, because I only have two black cards in my deck. So it's very unlikely that I'll draw a black card and I won't have a black source. And if you, you know, fall into a hand like that, just shuffle them up, throw your hand back, get a new hand. So for the most part, just, I wouldn't recommend going three colors unless your deck really wants you to go three colors. And that was one of the biggest mistakes I always made, is I'd have like a rare and red and white that I really liked, but maybe it wasn't amazing. And then I had a green spell that was really good, a green rare. And then maybe I had a white rare, and maybe I had like a green white rare, and I had just some really good green white deck. And then, but I really wanted that red card because it was good. But then I thought, you know, maybe I need to add in a few of these other red cards, maybe take out some of the white cards. Well, now I've got a really, like, I guess to a degree, unbalanced deck. Okay, so the power level dropped because maybe I took out some of my good white cards to kind of make up for the fact that I wanted, you know, some more red in my deck. And then I, you know, you just get punished. So I've been punished a lot. You're trying to go three colors and not drawing the lands that I need for the certain times, like getting trapped, especially when you start to go into like double colors. So if you've got like double white or double green or double red or even triple, you typically don't want to go three color for the most part, because it's going to be very hard for you to be able, and especially like in a format where there aren't, you know, easily graspable dual lands like the Guilt Gates were in Ravnica, it's a lot harder to go and commit that many colored sources to your deck. So you shouldn't go three colors all the time. So one of the most popular philosophies for sealed that I've taken a lot to heart is the bread philosophy. So if you don't know what it is, it's an acronym. It's basically, in my way, kind of a pick order. So these are the cards that you kind of want in your deck for the most part. So the B stands for baguette. The R stands for rye bread. The E stands for eclairs. Oh, I don't know. So B stands for bombs. R stands for removal. E stands for evasion. And A and the D are very controversial from what I understand. When I always think, what is A and D? Is it attack defense? Is it aggro and duds? Is it, what is it? So I've looked at several different sources, and I've come to decide based on my own knowledge of this is that A is abilities and D is defense. So bombs. What are your bombs? Well, in this, and especially in this set, gods are your bombs. Okay, they're very hard to kill. Most of the time, they're going to be inactive, but every single one of them has an extra little ability. Like Purphoros gives your creatures haste. Erebos allows you to turn your creatures into kill spells and draw you cards. Thassa can blink your creatures. Clothis can deal with graveyards and give you a little bit of advantage. Heliod can give your stuff lifelink and buff them up. Nylea can make things cost less. So there's obviously some play if they just sit as enchantments. So those cards, if you've got one, and the colors that they're within, you've got a good assortment of removal in those colors. You've got a good assortment of like evasion, whether it's unblockable, flying, things like that. Hexproof is another good one. If you've got, you know, good creatures with good abilities, like there's a lot of good escape cards in this set that are attached to things. I know that there's some cards that, you know, have activated abilities, like sacking creatures to drain people, sacking creatures to draw cards, discarding a card, drawing a card, stuff like that. So you definitely want to follow the bombs. And the bombs could also be mythics. So in this set, most of the mythics, for the most part, are good. They're just general, really just good cards. Obviously, the Titans are good. Kallax, is, for the most part, is the only one that's a little iffy. It really depends. He's definitely not the Planeswalker that can kind of take over the game. But he's still a pretty good card. You usually want to follow just the good mythics. So if you don't have gods, if you don't have good mythics, you want to kind of look at some of the maybe the more higher up rares. So maybe to help you evaluate what's a good rare, you can think of that, hey, does this rare help me get rid of something? Does it help me remove something? Does this rare help me gain evasion somehow? So when looking at white, Elspeth Conquers Death, exiles a permanent, makes things cost more for your opponent next turn, and then returns something from your graveyard to the battlefield. Just solid value. You've got Archon of Sun's Grace in white, which just make it's a 3/4 with flying, so it's got evasion. It makes 2/2s with flying that have evasion. You grab something like Nadir Kraken, which falls into that abilities category. It has an ability: when you draw a card, you pay one, put a counter on it, and make a 1/1 tentacle creature token. So you really could, you got to look at some of those and really factor those into, you know, how can I build the best deck out of the cards that I'm given. And Sealed is a very iffy format. It's very, I guess, RNG or luck-based. So, yes, you could pull a Sealed pool. That is just bad. It happens. This is limited. Unfortunately, Sealed has the highest level of feel bads because you can't do anything about what you got. You got 6 packs worth of garbage. Well, then you got a garbage deck, and I'm sorry. Just pilot it the best way you can. Draft allows you a little bit of leeway. It lets you sculpt your deck more so than Sealed does. So then you want to look at, you know, let's say you've got a good rare mythic that you really want to play around. So next you want to look at your commons and uncommons within that color. So you go, hey, is there a good amount of removal? Is it, if it's blue, does it have enchant frog effects? If it's black, does it have kill spells? Does it have exiling effects? Does it have things, ways to kill things? Does white have it? You know, does red have a good amount of removal? It's green. Because you definitely want some amount of removal. Just because you didn't open the good cards, or maybe you did open great cards, and that doesn't mean your opponent didn't do the same thing. So you wanted to have a way to get rid of their good cards so they don't kill you with them. So removal is very important in limited and in sealed formats. Then you want evasion. So this whole set relies heavily on flying, in my opinion. I've won so many games with flying, just having some a way to give flying, and probably one of the best pickups in this set, and it's a common, and it's the Wings of Hubris, which it's just a 2-mana equipment that gives something flying. That is just good enough for most decks. Just flying over your opponent is just amazing. It's always just been a solid way and a solid strategy for sealed sets or for sealed events, no matter the set for the most part. And just a fantastic card. That's a way to kind of fit evasion into your deck. Let's say if you don't have a lot of creatures with evasion, that's one way to do it. Maybe you fall into the kind of situation where the color that you have has the best creatures, or has the best removal, has the best evasion creatures, and the best ability creatures. Maybe you don't have any good rare mythics in those colors. Don't rely too much on those, especially if the supporting colors underneath them are just not good. It's very subjective. Some mythics can carry a deck if your deck's bad, but remember, you got to draw that card. So you got to build your deck in a way that you can get to your payoff. So if you're building your deck around a payoff with a bunch of jank cards, you got to find a way to get to that payoff. So don't always just dive all the way in on one mythic just because it's bonkers and build just a bad deck around it, because there are some games where you're just not going to draw that card and then you're just dead because your deck is subpar. You lowered the power level of your deck for one card. So I always just decided to just take the rares as a guidance, okay? Rares can help this help you push in certain directions, but they shouldn't be the ones that solely decide where to go. So I usually open my packs. I set my rares off to the side. I go, okay. Looks like some of these share certain colors in common. Cool. Okay. Let me look at my uncommons and commons. Let's see where the power is. Where's the bread in these? Okay. Oh, this color has a lot of good activated abilities. This color has a lot of removal. This color has a lot of evasion abilities. Stuff like that. You wanna kind of cone in on where you want to throw your sealed. So there's a lot of free reign of how to build. And honestly, I think the best way to get better at sealed is just play sealed. Just play limited formats. Sealed, draft, just practice. And you'll slowly get better. But some of these are just some good tips to think about while you're getting to help you improve faster. But Magic's a game of skill. Magic's a game of time and effort. So don't think just because you know these tips, you're going to start, you know, 7-0-ing sealed events on MTG Arena. This is just more of a guideline. But I'm going to keep the podcast pretty short today. Appreciate everybody listening to my little rant. But hopefully we can find someone to kind of assist me with the podcast next week so we can talk about some interesting things and you don't just hear me drone on. But I appreciate everybody for listening, and have a good weekend, everybody, and see you next week.